the opinion Shalon is Balbalu, that, you know, the various nations were not mixed up. Kiriketoni, Sefer B'tei Sefto, the Perek Basra, the Kedushim, as we learned in the Tosefta, in the last chapter of Kedushim, Omalei Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva said to him, Min Yomin to Isa, right? Min Yomin, you have made an error. Halacha, the halacha is what? Kvar Olos Ancheiriv, Uvil Be'les Uumais, right? And he mixed up all the nations. Lo Mitzrayim Bimkomon, or Lo Mitzrayim Bimkomon, the Egyptians are not living anymore in their, you know, the Egypt is no longer occupied by the original Egyptians. Velo Amonim Moyovim Bimkomon, right? Ela Amon, no say Mitzris, but somebody, Amon can marry an Egyptian woman. Or Mitzri no say Amonis, and an Egyptian marries an Ammonite woman. V'yechod and Elo, Muta Bechol Mishpechos Vadoma. And any one of these can marry any other nation of the world, right? V'yechod Bechol Mishpechos Vadoma, no say is Elo. And likewise, any of the other nations can marry these nations, right? V'hocho, and here he says, Hochi Pehusha, Atkan Leplige. Up to this point, there was no difference of opinion. Elo ibn Isbalbalu, right? If they have been mixed up, right? Ila, or not. Abal kule almo moidu, but everybody agrees the yeshdan ba'ila, right? That they are still living, there are still Egyptians, there are still Ammonites, and so on, right? Avalahi de Megillah tikosha. All right. So, so along comes Perish Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam comes along and he says, the Sancheiriv, afal pisha bilbil is kol oilam kuloi, even though he mixed up the entire world, but Eretz Mitzrayim lo bilbil. He did not do this to Egypt. Right, Kedetziv, as it's written, Befar Necho, right, Velo hosif od melch Mitzrayim lo tseis miyatso, ki lo kach melch bovel, minachal Mitzrayim at nahar pras. That the king of Egypt no longer left his own country, in other words, he stayed there in Egypt, because all the rest of it, the king of Babylonia seized from the river of Egypt, Menachem Mitzrayim, which, question is, what is it? Is it the Nile, or is it what they call the Wadi al-Rish, which is much closer to Eretz Yisrael, okay? But at any rate, from that point right up to the Euphrates, this is all part of the domain of the king of Babylonia, but not Egypt, okay? So Alma, we see Sancheiriv lo bilbel. From this, we see from this pasuk, Malachim Beis, we see Sancheiriv did not mix up Egypt, right? So the Hachitoni b'Seder Olam, and this is what we also learned in the Seder Olam, which is one of the very first history books ever written, Jewish history. Okay, that Meyom Sheolam Elachov Al Eretz Mitzrayim Oid Loizokvo Roish. That from the time that, you know, the king of Babylonia went to make war against Egypt, Egypt is no longer powerful. About Amon and Moab, Bilbel, but he did mix up Amon and Moab, but not, you know, Egypt, right? The whole Hanhu lo Ashkechan behedya, because we no longer find Amon and Moab around. Shalom Bilbelon, because that, you know, we don't find them anymore. That they would never mixed up. Kedichsev, mi bechol alehi arotzeis, and so on. He says, you know, is there any god who did not see his country conquered by me? Says Babylonia. Okay, Mitzrayim actually happens to be Asher over there, but Asher, Babel, a bigger zone. Okay, but Mitzrayim, Ashkechon, behed yeshalo bilbalan. All right. So in other words, I don't want to go through the entire Tosfos. But the question is, can we say, I mean, that Binyamin was right in that since Egypt was never actually conquered by Sancheiriv, so that therefore the restrictions pertaining to Egyptian converts were still in effect? Or are we to say the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua, who said that all the nations were all mixed up and they're all intermarrying one with another, and so therefore no nation is any more pure in that sense, and that therefore all restrictions are off, and anyone who wants to convert to Yiddishkeit can convert to Yiddishkeit. Okay, Needless to say, from the point of view of halacha, we follow that today. We follow Yeshua.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
What? They're all mixed up?
What?
They're all mixed up.
They're all mixed up, right. Yeah. All right, getting back to the Gemara, we're up to our Maimor. Right, the line before it says, you see Malachi Gimel over there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Our Maimor, Mastin Loho, the Rav Chinuno Bar Papa, Aho. Our Maimor applied this teaching of Rav Chinuno Bar Papa to the following situation. It says, Ma Dichsir, what is the meaning of the Pasuk where it says, Ki Ani Ad Hashem Lo Shonisi, V'yatem B'nei Yaakov Lo Chalisem? This is from the last chapter of Malachi, where it says, because I, the Lord, have not changed, right? And you, the children of Yaakov, you have not been destroyed. He says, Ani Ad Hashem Lo Shonisi, I have not changed. But the word Shonisi can also be understood in the word of Sheini. In other words, I don't have to go and strike twice, so to speak, okay? This is what he says. Lo hikisi l'umo v'shanisi lo. In other words, I did not smite a nation and then have to do it all over again. The atem b'nei Yaakov lo chalisem. And you, the children of Jacob, you have not been literally wiped out or destroyed. Now, what do you mean wiped out or destroyed? He says, Haine dichsiv. This is the meaning of the pasuk that we have in Hazinu, where it says, Kitzai achaleh bom. Literally, I will spend my arrows on them. In other words, every arrow that I have, I will send against them. Okay, it says chitzai kolin. Yeah, my arrows, he says, will be all spent, but behein enon kolin. But the people of Israel will not be destroyed. So that's yatem and Yaakov lo chalisem. Even though we have all kinds of people who attack us and everything else, but still, we will eventually survive our, those who wish to destroy us. Omer Rav Nuna said, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nifram in Ha'odom. He applies it to an individual. He says that Ribbono Shel Olam is not going to exact punishment from a human being, Ad Shetismali Se'osei, until, he's reached the full measure of what he has to be punished for. Shenemar, as it's written, Bimelo Sipko Yetzalo. In other words, when he has had his full measure, that's when his service will begin. Dorash Rav Chinuno Bar Papa. So another drash of Rav Chinuno Bar Papa. He says, Vaydechsiv, what is the meaning of? It's written, of course, in Tilim, Vananu Tzadikim Barashayim La Yeshayim Nova Sehilo, which means literally, sing for joy, O ye righteous in the Lord, right? Because, for the righteous people, praise is fitting. He says, Al tikre nova sehila. He says, don't understand it in the sense of praise is fitting, but rather ela nove sehila. But rather understand the sense that the nove, in other words, the God's habitation, so to speak, is praiseworthy. He says, Zeh Moshe v'David. This pasuk can be applied to both Moshe and David. Shaloi Shaltu Senehim Ma'asehim. That the enemies never had dominion, in other words, they're never able to destroy what they had built. David, in the case of David, Dichsiv, as it is written, this of course is an Echo where it says, Tovu Bo'orz Shiareho, which means literally, her gates have sunk into the earth. Moshe de Omar, in the case of Moshe, who said, Mismashkeno Mikdash Rishon, the Mem Top, I don't understand what it's doing over here, I'll be honest with you. In my book, I have the Omar and then the word Mace.
Memresh.
You have Memresh?
Memresh.
No wonder. That's a misprint in my book, so I couldn't understand over here. I have Mem Tov. No wonder I couldn't understand. So this should be a ratio. Thank you very much. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay, the Omar Mar, and as you know, in other words, as Talmud Chochem said, "Mishanivna Mikdash Rishon," when the first Beis Hamikdash was built, then Nignas Ohel Moed, then the tabernacle was buried. Kroshov, Krosov, Richov, Abunav, Adonov. In other words, the beams, the hooks, the bars, the columns, and you know, everything that was standing over there, you know, all these things, they all disappeared together with the you know, with with the building in the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, so he says Hecha. Where did they disappear to? Where were they, you know, put into Kedisa? Where were they buried? So Omer Rav Chista, Omer Ravimi. So Rav Chista said in the name of Ravimi, he says, Tachas Bechilos Shel Heichal. He says, underneath the Beis HaMikdosh, you have all kinds of Bechilos. Bechilos means like tunnels, caves, and things like that. Okay? I mean, as we know, you know, they're looking for passages, you know, right, like that Maccabean passage.
So, an interesting article a couple of weeks ago on the Har HaBayis.
Right.
Supposedly, where the Lahavdil, the mosque is,
right,
is not where the Kadosh Kedoshim was.
Correct.
Where the Mizbeach was.
Right.
A little further over is a piece of a rock.
Right.
And they began to dig, and in fact, they, as a matter of fact, know where the mosque is, where the Mizbeach was.
Yeah.
They saw a little opening. And they climbed in, and they saw
the shaft. Right.
You know, the dam of the Kabonos was put in there. They saw the shaft where the dam flew out, and apparently, in the expedition in the 1800s, they put the colored water in there, and it came out somewhere near Kidron.
Uh-huh. Right. Right, it would flow down to the Nahal Kidron.
Yeah.
Right,
exactly. Every few months or so, a little cohen was sent down to clean it out.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And there's a lot of tunnels underneath there.
Yeah.
We use that to a form to have a siege technique, right? It was used in biblical times for some kind of siege technique on the roof line.
That was something else. That was for the blood from the Gabonis to die. They are all kind of underground. They're underground.
Right, there are underground passages over there.
There are four or five entrances to the Har HaBayis there, and the caves where people, where the covenant got rest, etc., etc. There's some interesting articles in the UO magazines. A number of very interesting articles over the past year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
About these hidden entrances.
River Kidron. Was this a nest, or did they actually bury the tabernacle there? Was it a nest and went down there?
This tabernacle, I don't know what the story is.
Apparently they buried it. They buried it over there, so that, okay. Take a look at the Rashi. He says, Shalei Shalto, okay. He says, first of all, Ela Nova Tehillah, Noved, in other words, you know, the sacred habitation of Hashem is praiseworthy. It says, Aliske Nove, right? Botim Shebonu Yehaleluhu. In other words, the houses that they built, that Moshe and David built, they should praise him. Why? Shalei Sholtu Senehim Amaseyadehim. That the Goyim, you know, the enemies of the Jews, were not able to make use of it. Liyestenimehim. David, how do we know about the case of, you know, the temple that David built? Dechsiv, right? Tovu Boros Shiureho, right? That the her gates sank into the ground, right? La'elmine, and just above it is written in the book of Echo, Choshav Hashem La'hashchiz Chemas Basiyon, right? That the Lord, you know, decided to destroy the wall, the daughter of Zion, right? The Alok Siv Tovu Boros, right? And concerning it, you know, it's written that they sank into the ground. Umitzudas Siyon, he ear David. And the Mitzudas Siyon, in other words, the fortified area of Zion, this was the city of David, Ubeso, right? Gedexir Besefer Shmuel. And Ushebo Tzorin. And then when the enemies came, in other words, the Babylonians came in order to destroy the Beis HaMikdosh, So Tobu Hasha'orim, in other words, Dalsos Hasha'orim, the gates, the doors of the gates, they sang Shehoyu Shel Nechoshes, which were of bronze, O Shel Zahav, or of gold, and they sank into the ground, Kedei Shelo Yisa'um Oyevim, right? In order that the enemy should not carry them off. And then he says, Yesim Leinosu Yitam, because the enemy were not interested, you know, in taking wooden gates. That didn't bother. But these precious gates, they sank into the ground so that the enemy would not have any dominion over them, able to use them. Right. And of course,
what advantage do the gates have over the Caleb?
Okay. The answer is, of course, that the gates were very special, obviously, because, you know, otherwise the pasuk wouldn't make any sense. Oh. Right. Okay. And as we said before, what Moshe did, you know, he built a tabernacle, and we said that when Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, so then all these things were hidden underground. Okay. Now we'll do a couple of more minutes and we'll call it a night. Okay. Ton Rabba, third line from the bottom, he says, Soto Nosno Inech B'Mishenu Ra'uilo. Sota raised her eyes, you know, to someone who really was not worthy of her. In other words, you know, she was looking for a lover and was not worthy of her to do it, right? Masha Biksha Lo Nitan Lo. So that which she sought, she didn't get. Umasha Biyoda, and what she did have in her hand, in other words, her husband, right? Nitaluha Mimeno. They took from her, because as we said before, once the husband, you know, gives her the warning, and let's say that the water proves, you know, that Shitaka has been unfaithful. She's not only prohibited to her lover, but she's also prohibited to her husband, or take it the other way around.
Is she prohibited to?
Oh, yeah. Water? She's prohibited to both.
When? After or before?
She's prohibited to a lover in any case.
Just to a lover, right. Yeah. But okay. And if their husband doesn't want her to drink, he still can live with her.
That's a question. Not necessarily. There's a machlokes about that. It's a machlokes. One opinion that says that if he refuses, then in that case, you know, he can take her back. But another opinion that says that he does give her the ksuba, but he gets rid of her and father. Mm-hmm. Doesn't live with her anymore. Because, you know, he suspected her and so on. But, of course, if she drinks the wine, I'm over him, and she's proved innocent, that's a different story. Right. Okay. So, at any rate, what we're saying over here is that just as what she tried to get, she doesn't get, and what she does have, she loses, right? Yep.
Hold it.
The Babylonians took all kinds of things, the Caleb that were in the Beis HaMikdash. Sure.
The Urim disappeared.
Those things, right.
They took
right.
The
Urim was already buried in the days of Yoshio.
The Urim was they didn't.
No, because that was already buried in the days of King Josiah, because they saw that, you know, that Yehuda was in the bad way already. Right. But those, right. Because
traveling tabernacle.
No. We said that when Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, then the tabernacle with everything in it, the beams and everything else, all these things were buried underneath the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that's what we read a couple of lines before. All right. Yes, so we said, you know, Masha Bishali Tadlo, Masha Biyodin Taluha, right? They took from her what she did have, Taluha Memeno. So Shekola Nosin Einov, and he concludes by saying that whoever literally raises his eyes, but Masha Einu Shalo, towards that which doesn't belong to him, in other words, if a person wants to have that which does not belong to him, so Einos Dimlo, they're not going to give it to him. But what he does have, notlin himenu, they will take from him. Okay. Well, I think that will stop at this particular point. So next week, Amir Tzasha, we'll meet again at 7:45. Okay? And if we have to make a little bit later, well, pretty soon I'll be leaving for Israel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Make your announcements.
Where are we? I don't know.
We are on Daf Tes, Omid Aleph, three lines from the bottom. Okay? All right, we're continuing right now with what the Mishnah began, where it spoke about the basic idea of Midah Keneged Midah, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam judges you and acts towards you in the way you act towards others, if you remember. So now, Tana Rabbanan, sages taught us that Soto Nosto Inech B'Mishen Ravila. The Soto, this woman, of course, we're talking about the one actually who was guilty. She...
Guilty or accused?
Well, originally it's accused, but Rashi makes the point that we're talking about, you know, that...
she actually did?
We're talking about the one who really did it, right? Okay? And what is the point that he's making? He says that she literally... you know, gazed after someone, you know, who was not deserving of her, that he was not right for her. In other words, he wasn't the zivik, he wasn't the husband that she should have had. So, what was the result? Masha b'ksher lo nitan lo, Masha b'yod nitanu mimen. Says, what had been given to her, right, what she sought, she did not obtain. And what that she already had, they took from her. Now, not sure what are they talking about. They're talking about the fact that, you know, something that we mentioned from time to time, as Rashi puts it over there, take a look at the fourth line from the bottom, he says, Masha Bishol Nitamo, he says, Sha'asura Levoil, right? In other words, she is prohibited to her lover. So, in that particular case, what she sought her lover, right? But she couldn't obtain him because he is prohibited to her according to the law of the Torah, right? And on the other hand, what she did have, Masha Biyod, not Loi Menu, he says, Im Shoysa Mayim, right? Mesa, right? In other words, if she would drink the water, says Rashi, then she would die. Because, you know, she's so that it doesn't mean it may immediately, but it means, you know, that it'll happen. The Yim Hoydasa, and if she confessed, you know, that she had committed adultery, then Neswil of Allah. And in that case, she is now prohibited from, you know, to live with her husband. And not only that, but the Sidok Shibasa, she also loses the Ksuba. She gets, you know, she loses the marital. So in that particular case, as we say, right? Masha Biyodo.
It's not Ktuba.
Right.
Right.
So she
doesn't
get.
She didn't lose her address. She lost the Ktuba.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, not the Ktuba. Right. Correct.
No capital punishment.
Right. And then he makes a general statement. Says Shekola Nesin Eino B'Masha Eino Shalom. That whoever, you know, has his eyes on. In other words, he desires that which doesn't really belong to him. So Masha Mavake Shainosinlo, then what he seeks he will not be granted. Masha Biyode Notlinimeno. What he does have will be taken from him.
Does have is the husband in her case?
No, or first talking about the Sota, but from that he makes a klal godel. Klal godel is that with human beings, I mean, you try, you know, you want to have something that doesn't belong to you, and you're not going
to
get it. And by the same token, what you have, and you don't appreciate what you have, so you're going to lose that, you see. Yeah, so it's right. The Chayim Matzinu, he says, and we find likewise, this happened in the case of Benochash HaKadoni. Now, who is the Nochash HaKadoni? This is the snake in the Garden of Eden. Okay, what about him? So, Shenosan Eidim B'mashen Uriloi, right, that he sought that which is not fitting for him. So, Masha Bikesh Leit Nosnuloi, then in that particular case, what he sought, he was not granted. And what he already possessed, they took from him. So what are all the good things that he had? This is why we have to look at the Rashi. Okay? So Rashi explains. Nochesh HaKamani, he says, Nosan Einov V'Chava. What did he want? He wanted Chava as his wife. He wanted to possess Chava. Uvaleha. And according to Gemara, actually, he had intercourse with her.
Oh, he actually did.
According to this Bo'alev. There are others who say that Bo'alev means that he wanted to have intercourse with her. So it's a question, right, as to whether it actually happened or this is all that he wanted to do, okay? Let's take it in the case that he wanted to, but it wasn't accomplished. Nevertheless, why? Because what he had was taken from him, and what he didn't, what he wanted, he couldn't get. And by the same token, what he had, he didn't get. Now, what was it, you know, that he had? Well, first of all, it says, this is what the Torah tells us, but it says, Hanochosh Hishiyani, and Chava says that the serpent seduced me, literally, Hishiyani, enticed me, seduced me, right? Mm-hmm. So he says, Rashi says, it's Loshon Tashmish, Nisuyinhu. It's both the language of having intercourse, and also, you know, the Hishiyani reminds you of the word Nisuyin, in other words, of marriage. In other words, he wanted, to marry her.
And so,
The snake wanted her, right. Well,
that's why he
was a super snake, okay?
Super snake.
All right. Now, what did he have that was taken away from him? So Rashi explains, what is Noto Himenu? So he says, Koimus Akufa. He was supposed to be a creature who was erect, right? Not crawling on the ground. But instead, you know, he lost that, and of course he had to crawl on the ground, right? Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Gemara, right? Said, Ani Yomalti, I said, Yehei Melech Al Kol Behema V'Chaya. I wanted to make him king over all the beasts and the animals. The Yashav, but now, actually it says of the Urato, but we understand, okay? That he is to be cursed more than any other animal and more than any other beast of the field. Okay. I said, as the Ben Shlem says, Yahalech became his kufa, that he would walk erect. Afshav, now Al Gachoda Yeleh, he'll go on his belly. Aniyomarti, I said, Yehei ma'acholo ma'achol odon, that the food that he would eat would be the kind of the food that human beings eat, right? Afshav ofer yochal.
The fish, chicken.
Right? Now he will eat dust. Hu amar, he said, erog es odom yeses chava. I will slay Adam and I will marry Chava. Afshav now, eva oshes ben cho uvein ha'isha, right? In other words, Rabbeinu Shalom says to the snake, your punishment will be that I will give enmity between you and between the woman, and between your seed and between her seed. The snakes in the printing in this Gemara thing is me. Dollars instead of hay, so I don't know. The Bocher Hazetza wasn't very zetzing too well. Good evening, Marty. How are you? The Chain Matzino. Likewise, we saw a similar case in the case of Kayin, in the case of Kairach, in the case of Bilam, the Doeg, and Achitophel, the Gechazi, the Avsholom, Adoni Yohu, the Uzi Yohu, the Homan. And all of these different people. They sought that which did not belong unto them. Alright, now let's go over each of these characters and see what it's okay.
By the way, the snake is also used one of the blessings, Dan.
Yeah, right. He's done Nachashali, right. Absolutely. Done Nachashali Orach, people only Derach, right.
Same analogy.
Correct.
Down on the ground.
We'll see that. They're going to apply it to the case of Shimshon.
Shimshon.
Because he came from Shevet Dan.
Oh, yeah. Right. Dani.
Right. All right. So, what about all these different people? All right. So, for example, let's take the case of, let's see, who was the first one over there? It was mentioned Kain. All right. What did Cain want? Obviously, Cain wanted, you know, what belonged to his brother Hevel.
Right.
He wanted the world to himself.
And he couldn't get it.
And he didn't get it. Okay. Korach, of course, we know what he wanted. He was a rich man and everything else, but what did he want?
He wanted the kahuna.
You know, he resented the fact that
he was from Shevet Levi,
absolutely.
He wanted Aaron Cohen's job, exactly.
I thought it was like Moshe's job, no? No, he really wanted Aaron's job. Right. Because Moshe, you know, he says to him after, what kind of arguments do you have against Aaron and so on?
Oh.
Right. So he wanted the kahuna. He resented the fact that as a Levi, he felt he had a greater yichus than Aaron did. His father was older, and therefore his yichus was greater. This was the idea.
Right,
And so there's the next one, Bilam, of course. Bilam, we know, what did he want? He wanted all the money. No, he wanted Balak's money. That's what Rashi says. Take a look at the fourth line over there. You see? Yeah. Korach says, so Al HaKahuna, right? He wanted it, and of course, what was his punishment? Vidivla, you know, that he was swallowed by the earth. Bilam, it says, B'mamonoshel Bolok, he wanted, you know, the money of Bolok, the Kaleos Israel. So, V'nerak, B'midyon, and what was his punishment? He was killed in Midyon. Sholach, Nutel, Schar, Esrim, Yabo, Elef, Shenofel, Misrael, Ba'atzose. He wanted to go to Bolok in order to collect payment for the 24,000 Jews who died as a result of his Eitzah.
And where do we learn about him being killed in this?
We learned that he was killed in the battle, remember? At the beginning of Parsha Matos. Oh. Over there it says, you know, Saroz Hamid Yonim, he kisabasab kitsar himlahem nichlashanikla hemadva piyur, viadavar, kosbi vasachesi, and so on and so forth. And so it says, you know, that then by Yisbu al Midyon, and so on. In other words, that God volunteers, you know, from each tribe to go into war against Midyon. Okay. And also it says that they also killed Bilam among them.
It mentions Bilam.
So we know this was his punishment. He died. Okay. Now, who are the next people that we had over there? We had... Doeg v'Achitofel. Okay. Doeg, who was Doeg? So if you take a look, you know, in Shmuel, say for Shmuel, you see that Doeg, he says, Abir Horoyin. He was the most preeminent of the shepherds. He was like the head of the shepherd student, okay? The good old Shepherd Talmidim. Right. And he was also, you know, a great student and so on and so forth. Niskane ben David. And he became jealous of David. Shirohu Novin David. He saw that David, you know, was a very intelligent person. Yishtoar Mare Ponim Bahalochen. He also saw, you know, that he was a person who was handsome and who knew how to apply halacha and so on. Hinei Roisi ben Li Yishai. Right, I've seen a son to Yishai, Beis Halachmi, who comes from the city of Bethlehem, and so on. The Yoma Ba'agoda, the Chelek, and Gemara says, in the Chelek is the last chapter in Gemara Sanhedrin, it says over there, the Chol HaPosuk HaZeh, that this entire Posuk is Doeg Amoro, Beloshen Ra. It was Doeg who said it, and he wanted to slander David. He didn't like David, and he wanted to slander him.
Where was Doeg from?
Doeg... He was a shepherd or something.
He was an Israelite.
Yeah, he was an Israelite, right. But, you know, he slandered him to Saul afterwards, you know, because he resented King David, okay? So, according to this, I mean, he was jealous of David. He wanted to take David's position and said it, so as a result.
So his name is mentioned in where?
Doe Kohed Domi, actually, he's called. Doe Kohed
Domi.
Yeah, he was an
Edomite. Mentioned in the Torah?
No, not in the Torah, but you find it in Shmuel.
Shmuel.
Right.
I thought Abram, I mean David's
time. No. Achitophel, of course, he's very famous, you know.
Yeah.
Nasan Eino Bimlucha. In other words, he also, you know, he would have liked to become king according to this. Kedoma Bechelik. Ro'o Eish Yetzei Mi'amoso. He saw a fire going out of his virile member.
What?
Out of his penis.
Saw fire going out.
Saw fire coming out of it, right.
So
Chesavar Shalosid Liblaich.
He interpreted it.
Right, he interpreted, you know, that it would be, that meant that he was going to become king. Okay. Omar Shabiyodah, not Livimenu, right. What he had, they took from him, namely, that we find in Tillim the expression, you know, Lo Yechzu Yemehem, that they will not live even half the lifetime that
normally
they
would.
Normally they would have lived, that he should have lived. Right. So there he lost it also over there. Okay. Now, who is Gehazi? Gehazi, as we know, he was right with Elisha. Remember when Naaman came, you know, to be cured of his leprosy and so on. So Elisha refused to take any money, but Gehazi ran after Naaman in order to make a buck. Okay? So Gehazi says, "B'momone shel Naaman," right? He wanted Naaman's money, and of course, what happened to him?
In its
Torah, he became leprous instead. Okay?
Avshalom.
Avshalom, of course, we know. I mean, he was the David's favorite son.
And
Saul's favorite son.
Avshalom.
It's
David's son.
No, but we have Adoniah with another son first.
Wait a minute. What? Oh, you're not
in Rashi.
Okay,
we have Adoniah
Shalom,
that comes after.
It comes after Avshalom v'Adoniah. I'm going by the Gemara over here.
Oh.
Take a look at the text over here, okay?
Avshalom. Okay, Rashi doesn't comment on him, I guess.
Okay, fine. Let's do Avshalom.
All right. No, I'm going according to the Gemara.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
So
Avshalom.
Rashi doesn't comment on him.
Right. He didn't, because the story is so well known.
So
Avshalom, as you know,
He rebelled against
his father David. He wanted the Melucha, and he was ready to kill his father in order to do it, you see.
Awesome.
So, of course, eventually what happened was, you know, that he was killed by Joab and the troops of King David, okay? And then we'll come more to Adoniah to it a bit later. Adoniyahu, if you remember, he was another son of King David. And when David was very old, you know, as we read on Melchizedek, Zokim Bayomim, right, and he didn't know Mrs. Futzach. So at that particular point, right, there was a struggle as to who should succeed him.
Right.
So Adoniyahu proclaimed himself king, okay? Adoniyahu, he says, and not only that, but he also wanted the woman who was comforting King David. Remember, he didn't have an electric blanket, so he had Abishag Ashunonis, a very beautiful young lady. Who right. V'lo Yecham. Right. In other words, her job was really to to comfort him and keep him warm. Okay.
Too late.
Also about this, Avshalom also wanted to have the collect shots.
Oh, yeah, Pilat Shem, absolutely.
I mean, there was
he
also,
did.
Don't forget,
he
when
did.
You take a woman that was
right.
comforting the father, that becomes a power
right.
symbol.
Right, absolutely.
In any case, he took the mom, if you remember. He went up
right on the roof. You're absolutely
this
right.
This is part of when...
Yeah, this is Avshalom. This is part of his...
show that he was...
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was...
correct. That's absolutely right. Okay, yeah. Okay, Uzziyahu. So Uzziyahu, of course, was king of Judah, several generations after King Solomon, right? Uzziyahu, Yosam, Ochaz, Yehizkiyahu, and so on, right? Okay. So Uzziyahu, it says, Bichuhuda. What did he want? He wanted not only, he was king, but at the same time, he also wanted the Kuhuda, which he should not have had, okay? So Behatzoraz, Zorchal Mitzvah. As a result, he became leprous, and you could see, on his forehead, the signs of leprosy. Okay? Why? Kilayat, because he caused. No, I guess that belongs to the writer. Okay.
This is Haman.
All right. And of course, with Haman, we all know. He wanted to, to
coffin
everything
make
the Jews,
you,
and
you
said,
know.
Right. Okay. All right. Now the Gemara continues and says, Bayerech Hischilo Ba'avera. That's the concluding part of the previous mission. It says that she began the sinning by the thigh, in other words, by spreading her legs, right? And then, afterwards, it spread to her stomach, okay? In other words, to her womb and so on. So yes. Bayerech Hischilo Ba'avera, okay? So Minor. No, the, of course, the question is, why does it say in the Gemara, right, that, you know, we'll see in a few minutes, you know, the pasuk is of it, sof so bitno v'noflo yerecha, okay? Whereas it should have gone the other way around. So we have to have an explanation, you know, why in there, you know, the curse was that first the belly would swell and then, you know, the thigh would fall. Whereas it should have been the other way around, if we go logically, okay? This is what the Mishnah is concerned with. All right, so it says, how do we know, you know, that the Yerech is Chilo Ba'aviro? It says, Ilaymo, if we say, Mishum, if we say, because the Pasuk first says, Beseis HaDashem is Yerech Echno Feles, Yes, Bitlech Tzobo, this is what the Kohen says first to her, right? That, you know, because you know, you were suspected, you know, of having committed adultery, in that, you know, the God will make your thigh fall, right, and your belly to swell, right, and then what's the next thing? And then the hog sieve, and then afterwards the pasuk says, "Was also bitno v'noflo yerecha." In other words, in the reverse order, right? So Amar Abaye, Abaye said, "Ki layit." Layat tchila yarech b'hada beta layat. Okay, says when he curses, so he curses first the yarech, right, and then afterwards he curses the beta. In other words, you know, the thigh first and then the belly afterwards. All right, but umaya, but when the waters kibatke, when they sought in to prove, you know, the fact whether she's guilty or innocent, right? So it's kiyachayu batke. They go in the normal course. I mean, after all, how does water go? First it goes into the beten, right? So the beten bereisha, right? The hoda yarech. And after that it goes into the thigh. So then he says, biklola namik siv, not only that, but in the klo, it's also written, latzpeis beten, velan pil yarech, right? That to cause her belly to swell and to cause her thigh to fall. So the question is, I mean, so why do we have, first it says one, then it says the other, and then we have a third one that says back again to the same order. It said what, right? So he says, Hahu says this last pasuk that we said, Latzvos Velapildoch, he says, this is the modelor coin, it's because the coin, it's to inform her, the beten bereisha, that, you know, first her stomach will feel the effects of the curse, the hodo yoreh. And then the thigh will feel it. Why? Because if he were to say first your thigh is going to feel the effects and then the water, and of course, you know, by drinking it's just the other way around, so she's liable to think that he doesn't know what he's talking about. So for that reason, this is why
it would discredit the
idea, you know, the punishment of the Maimonides, right? Okay, Rashi Kilayit and so on. He says, "Kololahi tchilas haparanus." He says that the curse is the beginning of the punishment that she has to have. Miyu, nevertheless, says Rashi, "Kibat kimaya," when the water, you know, proves whether she's or tests, you know, whether she is innocent or guilty. Kiarchayu batke. It's going to do it the way the water normally would, you know, proceed. Sheba ma'ayim nichnesu techilo, first enters the intestines, right, and makalkal esayson, and, you know, makes them bad as the punishment, right, v'achre kein, no plus the yard. After that, they fall into the thigh, and that will be affected. And why does he say it, you know, in the order in which we said, you know, last verse, he says, shelo lahutzi las, Shayomru, because they will say, it didn't happen according to the order wherein, you know, the thigh first was affected and then only afterwards the belly. So therefore, and therefore we would say, you know, that the punishment of her suffering is not because of our action. Okay. Alright. Now, since we're on the general theme, you know, of misdeeds, as we've already seen, so now we have a couple of other examples, famous misdeeds, okay? Shimshin Olach Acharenov, right? Shimshon also was enticed by what he was looking at.
What he saw.
He was looking for he was looking for women, you see, unfortunately. And as a result, right, whatever it is. Okay, so the Fichon, for this reason, Nikru Plishtim Esenot. This is why the Philistines, you know, took out his eyes. Okay? Shenemar Biyachazuhu Plishtim, right, that the Plishtim seized him, right? Biyanakru Esenot. And they pierced out his eyes. Okay. Again, it's the same continuation of the idea about, you know,
what was the result of
the way Adam, right, right, the way a person acts towards others. So this is the punishment that he's going to get.
What is the word to stab?
Nidkar. To stab, yeah.
Yeah.
Nidkar,
yeah.
He was stabbed.
But the doctor means to knock out.
As the
right.
To gouge out.
Now the word nikra now, and also if you remember, Rosh HaNikra, why? The water was carved out of the cave.
Oh, I never thought
of
that.
Yeah.
Oh, and it looks sort of like an eye socket.
Right.
Some of those.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Okay. Avshalom. Avshalom, who we spoke about before, but now we go into his story. Nizgoeh Besaro, right? He was very proud of his hair. If you remember, he let his hair grow long and so on and thick and so on. So the fich running away on his mule. And he passed underneath a tree and his hair got caught in it, and he couldn't extricate himself. His hair was so thick that he was left hanging. That's when the army, you know, David's army caught up to him. And referring to what you spoke before, Ulafi Shabal Esapilak She of Aviv, and because he had relations, he had intercourse with 10 concubines of his father David, Lefichach Nasnubo Esalunchios. So for that reason, it says over here Lundios, but if you see, it should really be Lundios, because in Greek the word Lunche means like a dart, a spear. Okay.
Lance.
Yeah, the lads, whatever you want to call it. So for that reason, they pierced him, you know, with 10 darts. Shenemar, as it's written, by Yasobu, Asora, Noshim, Nasekle, Yoav, 10 men who were the armor bearers of Yoav surrounded him, right? And of course, you know, they hurled their darts at him, okay? Ulafi Shegonav Gimel Genevos. Right? And what are they? First of all, Levaviv, his father's hut. In other words, he stole, literally, which means, in other words, he plotted and he deceived his father. Velev Bezdin, and also that of the Bezdin, Velev Yisrael, and of all Israel. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vayigdal Avshalom is Lev Anshe Yisrael, that Avshalom literally stole away the hearts of the people of Israel. So the Fichor, for that reason, Nisku Bo Gimel Shvatim. For that reason, three, because the word Shvatim over here doesn't mean tribes, but it means it's like rods.
Right.
Three rods were, you know, were stuck into him. Shenemar Vayikach Shlesha Shvatim Bechapai Vayiskaim B'Lev HaSholem. Of course, it's what Yoav, you know, the coup de grace, that he finished them off. Okay? Right, here we've been talking until now about bad things, but for good things too, you get rewarded. Miriam himtina lemoishe shahachas. Miriam waited for her brother 1 hour. Shenemar, of course, when it says 1 hour, it could mean even just a few moments, I understand, because shahachas normally has that implication from the point of view of halacha. For example, let's say the seventh day of Shiva, okay? So he's supposed to observe Shoah Achas. But the question is, does it really have to be 60 minutes or not?
What do you mean you observe Shoah?
When you get a 7 day of Shiva.
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus 1 hour?
No. The 7 day, if you sit 1 hour, this is the idea. Shoah Achas,
it's like you would have said
the entire day.
Before you rise.
I mean, so the 7 day is just 1 hour.
That's correct. But as a matter of fact, even the Shoachas is not necessarily Shoachas. I mean, it's just an expression that means which for a short while.
Could be...
Yeah.
Could be less than an hour.
Right. Could be less than an hour. Okay. All right. So at any rate, she waited for her brother, because as we know, you know, this was when Moshe Rabbeinu was put into the basket, right, and then the river over there, and she waited around in order to see what would happen to him, right? As it's written over there, that his sister stationed herself at a distance. So the fichok, for that reason, right? For this reason, the people of Israel, they waited for her. They did not move on for 7 days while they were traveling in the midbar. They just waited and didn't budge. Shenemar, as it's written, v'yom lo nosa ad hayosef Miriam. That the people did not travel until Miriam was once again
clean,
able to go back into the camp again, that she had been cured from her leprosy. Right. Yosef, another example of the good, and so you know how good can be multiplied. Yosef Zocholik Borisoviv, right? Joseph was the one who was worthy enough to bury his father, bury Yaakov, right? The Yain be Echov Godol Nimeno, and among his brothers none was as great or as exalted as he was. Shenemar, as it's written, Vayal Yosef the Boris Oviv, right? That Yosef went up in order to bury his father. Vayalu Imoy Gam Rechev Gam Poroshim, right? And together with him went also chariots and horsemen and so on and so forth. It's a whole procession, right? And naturally, the Rechem Parashim, this is a symbol of what? That he was like Malchus, like a Melech. Right. So, and yet, he was the one who was what? He was this Asik, he was the one, you know, who took charge of burying his father, right? Mi lanu godol mi Yosef, right? So, therefore, who is so great as Yosef? Shalom is Asik boy Ela Moshe. And the only person who took care of taking, you know, Yosef's remains was Moshe himself. So in other words, he was given the signal honor that Moshe Rabbeinu, the head of the people of Israel, should be personally, take charge of burying him. Yes.
Where was Yosef buried?
Well, I mean, first of all, okay. It is written over there at the very end of Sefer Bereishis. It's written, Vayachantu also, right, that they embalmed him, Vayisum bo arom b'mitzrayim, and they put him into, a coffin in Egypt, okay? Uh-huh. And then we don't know what happened at that point. So according to our Chachomim, what happened was that the Egyptians thought that they would prevent the people of Israel from leaving Egypt by taking Yosef's Oron and sinking it in the Nile. Sinking it in the Nile, nobody knew how to find it, and therefore the people of Israel remained slaves, because they knew, you know, that he had commanded his brothers, that the day comes and you would leave up, take my bones together with you, okay? So what happened? So according to Chazal, what happened was that, you know, when the time came for the redemption from Egypt, so Moshe Rabbeinu prayed to the Rabbeinu Shalom. He went to the river and he prayed. He said, Rabbeinu Shalom, please, the time has come now for the people of Israel to be redeemed from slavery. Please help us to fulfill the pledge that we had made to Yosef, because we can't leave without him. Okay? So at that point, Yosef's
coffin
floated to the top of the river, and the Moshe Rabbeinu was able to get hold of it, to retrieve it, and so on. So this is how
I think your question was, where in Israel was he buried?
That was my question. This is such a wonderful
The answer to your question is, he was buried in Shechem. In Shechem. And this is why they have a yeshiva over there, you know. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And we had a chance, we didn't get rid of them, so.
Hi, Gavol, what shall we say? Yes. I about to say no harab. Yeah. Okay, so today we're suffering as a result. Yeah. Okay, anyway. Yeah. All right. So, yeah. Okay. All right. So, anyway, we see there was Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Shenemar. Yeah, Moshe Zocha Beatzmas Yosef, right? He was the one who was deemed worthy to take charge of the bones of Yosef, right? The remains of Yosef. The Ein Yisrael Godel Memeno, and there was no person in Israel greater than Moshe himself. Shenemar, Vayikach Moshe Zatzmas Yosef Imo, right? He is the one who took the bones, and in spite of the fact that he was, you know, such a godel, right? Nevertheless, he took charge personally of it. And then it says, "Mi godel be Moshe," right? And who is his greatest Moshe? Shalom nisasek bo yelah mokim. Who, in the final analysis, took care of the burial of Moshe Rabbeinu? It was the Rabbeinu Shalom.
These are all rewards because
he took
care of Moshe.
Exactly. That's what we're saying. I mean, in contrast, you know, to again, it's still fulfilling the idea
of, you know, for good deeds.
As the previous Mishnah had started by saying, that how you act is how you're going to be repaid. Exactly. Yeah. Right. So if you do evil, and we had through the, you know, we went through a whole series of people. So we see that their reward or their punishment was in accordance, you know, with what they had sought. But on the other hand, if you do good, then the Rebbeinu Shalom will see to it that you will be granted
a reward,
not just by the Rebbeinu Shalom, but also by, you know, fellow human beings as well.
But, you know, obviously, this is just one opinion and one, I mean, the whole argument of Tzadik Yitot.
Right. They're not going into it over here, right? That's
the
Gemara.
That's all related.
That they have, the Gemara Brochus, for example, has a discussion about that. Yeah. Tzadik Vatovle, Rosh Hashanah. I mean, the other way is Tzadik Vatovle and Rosh Hashanah. Yes. Okay. All right. So anyway, it was Rabbeinu Shalom himself, you know, who took care of Moshe Rabbeinu's burial. Shenemar, as it's written, Vayikbor Osei Bagai, that he buried him in the valley. Of course, it doesn't. We don't know who did, but obviously, since there was no man around with Moshe when he went up to Har Nevo, so it had to be the Rabbeinu Shalom himself. And then it says, Lo al Moshe Bilvad Omru. Not only concerning Moshe do they say this, El al kol tzaddikim, but concerning all the righteous people, Shenemar, as it's written, Pasuk says in Yeshayo, it says, V'holach lefonecho tzidkecho, that your righteousness will precede you, Kevod ad Hashem yasfecho, and God's glory will gather you in.
God personally attends to
the tzaddikim. To the tzaddikim himself, right. He gathers, he welcomes them in the Gan Eden. Okay? Take a look at the Rashi to the Mishnah. Shimshon holach acharino of Giriyal of the Commons, we'll learn further on. And then, of course, Al Esa Pilakshe Aviv, if you remember, you know, that this is what our friend Avshalom did, Kedetsiv Sefer Shmuel, Vayazov Esa Noshim Pilakshim, Lishmor Abayis. It's sitting over there that David left behind 10 women who were his concubines in order to take care of the house while David himself fled, if you remember. Okay, so you know, so Avshalom had himself a good time with him. Okay.
But it's Pilakshim, not Pilakshot.
Yeah, it should be Pilakshim, right. It's Pilagish and Pilakshim. Naturally, it's
it could be Pilakshim.
Well,
it's used Pilakshim mostly?
We say Pilakshim, right.
Is it ever used Pilakshot?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, is it used that way anywhere? I'm trying to think.
The answer is, in the Tanakh, absolutely no.
It's always Pilakshim.
Right, right. But if you would ask me, I mean, we know that sometimes it came to the Shon Chachamim, so there they didn't go according to what we have in Lashon HaMikra, but instead there was a tendency. All right.
Use correct grammar.
Right. Exactly.
Use the modern grammatical.
Right.
Nekeva.
I mean, we should say, for example, pininim yikarot, because, you know, it's a feminine word, okay?
Well, there's a lot of words that have
right.
both.
Right, but in Lashon Chacham, they can say pininim yikarim or something like that.
A lot of words
right.
have ACDC,
yeah.
right?
Right.
Well, a lot of words are both masculine and feminine in the Hebrew.
Yeah.
Shemesh,
some of them are, right. Right. Derech, yes. Derech. Ruach, I mean, these words could be masculine and feminine, right. Okay. Okay. He says, Lun v'yos, but as I told you, it should really be Lun v'yos. But at any rate, he explains it's Chanisos. In other words, that the spears. Yeah, I remember what it says when Yeshayahu is there. It's, you know, Chanis is a javelin, a spear, okay? And then, the Chitzu, Chavusom, Li'itim, the Chanisos, Sehem, Labaz, Beiros, right?
Well, you say it should be Lun v'yos. How come they keep on repeating the misspelling? Is it deliberate? Is it...
it's not the
word. Or it became a slang and that's the way it's...
No. It's simply that a lot of the Zetzes didn't know Greek. And, you know, it's easy enough to confuse the base with a cough.
Okay,
very
but,
easy.
But later on they knew better, so why didn't they correct it?
Because you keep the original script... And you put a side note to say, you know, that
was it correct?
Very hard to correct.
Yeah.
Even when you don't want to temper. You don't want to temper with it, even if you know better.
Exegesis. I mean,
exactly.
You know, it's waste time. Do you read this book, The Promise by Chaim Potok? Not the Chosen.
Long time ago.
Long your time, sir.
Yeah.
One of the subplots he brings in is Reuven Malter, not the real hero, the innocent son, is Reuven Malter. One of the things is...
He's the father, right, Reuven, if I remember correctly.
Reuven's right. So the son is... the father was David.
The father was David, I guess. I mean, he wrote somebody years ago.
Ferguson. So, he has a mahaloka with his Rosh Yeshiva.
Yeah.
And it concerns a exegesis where he claims that something in is either the Gemara or Rashi was incorrect and should be corrected. And so this Rosh Yeshiva turns it on his head and makes this like into his final exam, if you will.
Yeah.
And he prepares and he brings along some references from the Yerushalmi to show that he was right. And the Rosh Yeshiva accepts that he was right and he actually was entitled to make this correction. The whole point is to show how difficult it is, how the way the so many centuries of tradition prevented any change at all, with good reason.
Right.
Just to not only not to freeze, but to...
preserve.
Yeah, preserve. I mean, to...
listen, I mean, don't forget, in the Torah, you have the Masoret, okay? And the Masoret tells you that this is the way you have to
read it,
understand it. So, you know, we have creative. But this is the tradition.
You still don't change.
Yeah, right. Okay, weiter. Lev Avi v'Lev Bezdin. Right, it says that he stole, you know, three hearts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Lev Avi, this we know. And how about Lev Bezdin? The Siv, he says, this is what Avshalom said. He said, Elchano, he said to his father, you know, give me permission. He says, I will go by Shalmos Nidorai, right? And I will take care of, you know, the oaths that I made. I made a promise that I was going to give sacrifices and so on. So let me go and Siv. And then it's written after that, Es Avshalom, Holchum Osayim Ish Keruyim, right? That together with Avshalom, there went 200 men who were kruyim. Kruyim means invited by him to go along, right? People who high society, right?
Holchim
l'tumam, and they went in all innocence. They didn't know why they were following him. In other words, they assumed that they were going to escort him, you know, because he wanted to make some sacrifices, right? So the Amin and the Saita, the Rishalmi, we say in the Gemara Saita and the Rishalmi version that Kruyim Midovid. In other words, who were these people? These were people invited by David himself. He told them that they should go together with Avshalom. Shal Yidei Mitzvahs Dovid. It was in accordance with David's command, Olchu Imo, that they went with him. So Omaloi, so he said to him, Kisovli Shayelchu Imi Oson Shanayim She'efchar. Right? He said, write that together with me should go those two people whom I will choose. the chosav lo. And so, you know, David wrote, you know, like a note giving permission for this, right? And it seemed, you know, that it was the seal, it looked like the seal of King David on it. That's what they saw, right? For these two people. The Holchim Acharav, right? And so they followed Avshalom. The Chen Lishnayim Acharim. And so on and so forth. Another two. Arch Kines Mosayim, until he finally gathered 200 people. The Chulon, Rosh Sanhedrois, right? And they were all heads of the Sanhedrin. So, Harei, we see, therefore, first of all, Lev Aviv, in other words, he deceived his father, right? And then the Lev Bezdin, because of these people, you know, 200 members of the very Sanhedrin, and in that case, they deceived the Lev. Then it says, well, Lev Anshe Yisrael, that it's written, you know, specifically, that he deceived the people of Israel. Dichsiv, Bekerav Ish, it's not Bekerav Ish, but it should be Bekrov Ish and Ishtachavos. When people came, let's say, to prostrate themselves, so, you know, he would approach them and say, don't you think that I would make a better king, you know, than my father? Uchsiv, Ni Yisimeni Shofet Boretz, would that I would become the judge in this land, because, you know, how did he deceive them? He said to them, You people, you come to King David, you expect to get justice? You're not going to get justice from him. Would that I would become the judge, and then you'd see, you know, how I would be able to take care, you know, of you.
That's what he
means
by
right. And then we'll see, and then it's written specifically, Vayignev Avshon Eslev Anshe Yisrael. That he stole literally the heart of the people of Israel. In other words, you know, he deceived them. Yeah. All right. Now, how about, you know, afterwards we read about the good people, Yosef and so on, says, V'yem b'echov godol mimenu, why shehoye melech? We know that he was like a king. Harei mida shemodad, and therefore we see that just as he acted, so this is what happened to him, shenikbar ovir b'gedoylim, right, that his father was buried in the presence of great people, prominent people. And so he received the same treatment, that he too, when he was to be buried, he would be buried, you know, by great people, namely, by, of course, by Moshe Rabbeinu. And then it says, Bilonu, as far as Moshe Rabbeinu, who is so great, right, Inyan Kved Kavura, Likbar Bigdoilim, Godol Mi Yosef, well, before it's Yosef, who, you know, deserved such great honor, if not Yosef, Shalon Isasek Boy El Moshe, and it was Moshe himself who took care of him, Shehu Godol Mi Yisrael, who was the greatest person in Israel, V'yein Bi Yisrael Godol Mi Menu, right, and there was no one as great as him, so Harei Shebemido Shemodat Likbar is Yosef, so we see that just as he acted towards Yosef, Adyadei Godol, right? In other words, that Yosef was buried not by ordinary people, but by a great person, by Moshe Rabbeinu himself. So therefore, Bo Modedu Lo. So by the same token, this is the reward that he received. She'en Godol Bichvede Kovim Moshe, She'en Isasek Bo Yela Kodesh Baruch Hu. Right? That the great honor given to Moshe Rabbeinu is that the Rabbeinu Shalom himself was the one who buried him. Okay. Well, I think maybe I'm going to stop at this point. I'm getting a little bit hoarse, and we have a new Gemara over here, so we'll start with this. I'm about to tell you right now. naturally, next week I will already be in Israel at this time, in Yitzhak Hashem. And I expect to be back, please God, let's say on the Shabbos of the 10th of May. The 9th we're arriving in New York. I hope that I'll be able to, we're getting in about 4:30 in the morning, but I hope that I'll be in shape to drive back to Springfield at that time.
But you're not going to stay over Shabbos in New York?
So we'll come back over here. Yeah. Of course, after all, we'll be gone quite a bit of time. So if I'm up to it, I expect to be home.
Yeah.
Okay. So at any rate, following that, definitely we'll be back in Springfield. So let's see, what would that be? That would be something like May the 13th or something, on a Wednesday night. That we'll be meeting again.
May 14th, 1997. Right. And we're on.
And we are on. Okay. We happen to be on Daf Tes, Omid Beis.
Right.
But again, I want to say just a couple of words of introduction before we continue with this, okay? I don't know where my voice is tonight. Skagayim followed me. All right. Basically, what we're dealing with in this section, at this particular point, is contained in the idea that we find on Daf Ches Omid Beis, where the Mishnah at that particular point made a general statement. And that statement was that B'mido shod moided bo moided in law. In other words, according to the way a person measures out to other people, in other words, how he acts toward others, right? What he does is the way the Rebbeinu Shalom eventually is going to act towards him, right? So they gave various illustrations for this, if you remember. The basic illustration, of course, I mean, what is its relevance to Soto? Is the fact, you know, that she prepared herself, if you remember, for her lover, and so therefore, in various ways, so that her punishment, therefore, is going to be based on what she did. And so that, for example, let's say that, you know, she adorned herself in order to attract a lover, so that therefore, what is the kohen going to do to her? He's going to be menavelo, so he's going to make her look mias and so on, you know, by the various ways, okay? And then this led to the Mishnah that we had at the end of the last session that we had, which we have on Tes Omid Beis, where they speak about some famous people in the Bible and see, you know, that their own actions brought about consequences in accordance with how they had acted, okay? So the Mishnah started, if you remember, by saying about Shimshon Halacha Charedov, right? Shimshon, he lusted really after, you know, what he saw. In other words, he was out always chasing women, as we'll see. So that therefore, what happened? Because he was using his eyes in order to, you know, to gaze upon women and to lust after them. So the result was that, you know, Lepichot Nikru Plishtim Aseinu. This is the reason why the Philistines put out his eyes. That was his punishment, okay? And they bring the pasuk, and then they bring the example of Avshalom, the son of David, who was so proud of the hair that he had on his head that he let it grow very heavy and very long and everything else. And in the end, of course, it was his hair that betrayed him, in that, if you remember, when he was trying to flee from David's army, from Joab, so with that particular point, right, so he was riding on a mule and his hair caught in the branch of a tree and he was left hanging over there. He couldn't escape. And as a result, the pursuing army was able to kill him. And then, after that, they point out that this isn't only as far as people who commit evil, but it's also true as far as people who do what's good, that they will be rewarded by the Rebbeinu Shalom. And they gave the following examples. Example number one in the Mishnah that they gave was about Miriam. Miriam waited for Moshe Rabbeinu at the time, you know, when his mother had put him in the little basket and the bulrushes and so on, and she stood by. So as a result, when she suffered leprosy, then the people of Israel, it's written over there, Miriam, that the people did not go on to the next stage in their journey until Miriam had once more been returned to the camp. Because remember, what was the punishment of a Metzorah, a person who suffered from leprosy? They had to be Mechutz L'machne. So that therefore, because she waited, therefore the entire people of Israel waited for her to get well before they could move on. And they bring other examples, the examples of the fact that because Moshe Rabbeinu, for example, well, I mean, first of all, we start with Yosef, who eventually saw to it that Yaakov Avinu was buried in Eretz Canaan, according with his wishes. It was Yosef who left his position as, you know, viceroy, the assistant to the king, and so on and so forth, in order to personally escort his father, of course, together with his brothers, to the Ma'arat HaMachpelah in order to bury him over there. And so what was the reward of Yosef? The reward was that when the people of Israel were to leave Egypt, it was Moshe Rabbeinu himself who carried the bones of Joseph. It's written, you know, Vayikach Yosef Satzmus, Vayikach Moshe Satzmus Yosef Imam, right? That Moshe took the bones of Joseph with him. And because Moshe Rabbeinu showed this kindness to Yosef, so who in the final analysis was the one who took care of the burial of Moshe Rabbeinu? Of course, the answer was it was Rabbeinu Shalom himself. So we see then that it applies, you know, not only to the wicked people, but it applies also to the righteous people as well. As the Mishnah concluded by saying, right, El al kol tzaddikim, in other words, we can apply this general rule to all the people who are righteous, shenemar, as the Pasuk says, v'holach l'ponecha tzidkecha, k'vod Hashem yasfecha, that your righteousness will go before you, and God's glory will gather you in. Okay? So now, at this particular point, this is where we left off. So now we continue now with the exposition of this particular Mishnah. Particularly, we start in first with the story of Samson, Shimshon. Okay? So again, I want to simply say a couple of words of introduction to the story of Shimshon. If you remember, before he was born, his mother was told by an angel, you know, that this boy is going to be the person who is going to help the people of Israel against the Philistines. And therefore, he was to be a Nazir. He was to be, you know, a Nazirite. And she, in turn, also had to prepare herself for such a birth. And what was she told to do? She was told that she was not to eat or drink, you know, any of the things that the Nazir is prohibited. Grapes, anything which is soaked, even, you know, let's say if you have grapes and you soak it in water. It's, by the way, that's a favorite way back in Europe that they used to make homemade raisin wine, if you remember. So, right, so you're not allowed to drink the liquid of it. Mm-hmm. Okay? And then also it says, V'yaltochli kol tomei. Don't eat anything which is tummy. So naturally we're going to have to discuss that when we go into the exposition of this. But this is as far as his mother is concerned, that she was told, you know, to abstain from these things because the child was to be a Nazir Elohim, you know, min habat. He was to be a Nazirite dedicated to God from the from her womb. Okay. And then, of course, he gets, you know, he grows up. And he starts in to do what? The answer is he starts in to go chasing after women. Okay? So the first woman that he chased after is a woman in a town called Timnah. Okay? And he sees a woman, he says, Mom and Dad, this is the woman that I want. The fact that she's a shiksa doesn't seem to bother him. But he says, you know, Ki Yoshua Bieda, he says, and she's the one who I find that she's right in my eyes, in other words. Okay, so already he's using his eyes, he's looking, you know, with his eyes in order to spot a desirable young woman. All right, so they get married, and according to some of our commentators, you know, in their commentary on the Nach, you know, so they say that actually we can't conceive of Shimshon marrying her without the fact that she became a Gioris. No. She must have become converted. Well, she didn't have such a happy fate afterwards because the Philistines, you know, they were after her. But at any rate, this was his only marriage. But it's not the end of his adventures with women. We find that there are other cases too that occur. One of them is with a Zona.
Zona.
A Zona. In other words, he sees a woman of loose character, mm-hmm. to put it mildly, okay, and he decides, you know, that he likes her and he wants to have relations with her, okay? And then finally, of course, the famous story about Delilah. Now, of course, in between there are other stories that we find, but at any rate, you know, he is the person who carries on a single-handed fight against the Philistines, and of course Delilah was actually hired by the Philistines in order to entice him, to seduce him, so that she could put him out of commission, okay? And she was promised a great fortune by the Philistines if she was able to accomplish it, okay? So as we go along, we'll discuss this in greater detail, okay? But the first part now goes back again to Shimshon because he was mentioned first in this Mishnah, okay? Excuse me. Alright, so Tana Rabbanan, okay? Shimshon Miyeno of Borad says, Samson, he rebelled of course against the Rebbeinu Shel Olam because of the fact that, his eyes were the cause of it. So, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Vayomi Shimshon Oviv, right, and Samson said to his father, Oso Kachli, take her for me as a wife, right? Kihi Yoshua Miyeno, as I said before, because she seems right in my eyes. So, Latikha, for that reason, the Mishnah said before, Nikru Plishtim Zainav, right? The Philistines pierced out his eyes. Shenemar, as it's written over there, the Yochazuhu Plishtim, the Philistines seized him. Vayanakru Zainav, right? And they pierced his eyes. So now the Gemara asks the following question. It says, Aini. Aini always means, is this so? Literally, isn't it so? But it's always asking a question. In other words, it's challenging. Mm-hmm. And what is the challenge over here? They say, look, we have a different pasuk. It says, for Hoksiv, it's written, the Ove, the Imo, lo Yadu, that his father and his mother did not know, Kima Hashem Hu. That this, the fact that he married this woman, was actually pre-planned, so to speak, by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Why? Because by virtue of this, he would make an inroad and begin to do the work of saving the people of Israel from the hands of the Philistines. Well, if the Rebbeinu Shel Olam planned this for Shimshon, so how can we say that Shimshon was rebellious by seeking her out? You understand? So the Gemara says, Ki'ozal, but nevertheless, when he went, he says, Miho, Bosa Yashwisa Ozal. Nevertheless, he went, what? Not because he was trying to fulfill God's will, but rather he went because he had a Yetzer Hara for this woman, and this is what he wanted. He wanted to fulfill the desire of his Yetzer Hara. Okay. Tanya, we have learned that in this case they bring in the Tosefta and they say, Rabbi Omer, Rabbi says that Chilas Kilkulo Ba'aza, Lepichot Loko Ba'aza, he says. The first case where Samson went astray was actually in Azo. This is where, as I said before, this is where we had to deal with the prostitute, right?
Right.
So the result was what happened. This is why he suffered his punishment. In other words, where did the Philistines take him eventually when they made him into a spectacle? To Azo. Of course, by the way, Azo is Gaza,
Gaza.
Oh, yeah. In Hebrew, we call it Azo. For some reason or other, the Greek translation put in a G over there. So that's the reason why we call it Gaza.
Mm.
Okay. Why? Well, there's a theory maybe that once upon a time an iron had some sort of a sound. Because, they do another comparison to the fact that in Arabic you have crazy sounds. Okay. So that they think that this may be it. Other possibilities, frankly, may be that the Greeks also, they had their problems too. Okay. That they did not really have an equivalent for the iron, so they put it together. This is all in the realm of theory. However, this is what it is. Gaza is the English name based upon the Greek translation of the Bible, and Azo is its Hebrew name. Okay? So, they say, Tchilas Kilkulo Ba'aza. How do we know that where was the first place in which, the beginning of his downfall started over here in Azo? The Pasuk says, Vayel Shimshon Azoso, right? That Shimshon went down to Gaza. Vayar Shom Isha Zaino, and there he saw a woman who was a prostitute, right? And of course, he wanted her. So Lepicho, for that reason, Loka Ba'aza. He suffered his punishment in Azo. Dixiv, as the Pasuk says, Vayudos Azoso. That the Philistines bore him down to Gaza. So now they ask the following question. They say, Hawksiv, isn't it written by Yerid Shimshon Timnasa, even as we read that, you know, just a few lines above, that he went down to Timna? So why do you tell me that Chilas Gilkula was where? In Aza, not in Timna?
Mm-hmm.
So how do we reconcile that? So they say, Techilas Kilkulo Miho Be'Aza. Nevertheless, the real beginning of his downfall was in Gaza. In other words, with this woman, and not with the first woman. So Rashi explains, why not with the first woman? So the answer is, because after all, he did marry her. So if he married her, it's not so great in the Vera as it would be, you know, to go to a prostitute after he's already a married man. Mm-hmm. Understand? So this is how they understand that. Okay. Excuse me. Okay. So now we continue. All right, first let's take a look at the Rashi just for a couple of moments. There isn't too much Rashi over here. It says, Bein of Morad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean? He rebelled with his eyes. So the answer is, Al Yedei Enov, by means of his eyes, Morad Bedbora. He rebelled against his creator by doing that which was wrong. Okay? And then it's written, after all, you know, that the parents didn't know, Kima Hashem, who, that this was ordained by God. What? Sheh. Choshak, but also Isha, that he had a desire for this woman, Kedeli is Goris Baptishtim, in order to begin to make trouble for the Philistines. So, and then the question is, where was Tkilas Kilgula? Was it in Aza or was it in Timna? So it says, Vahog Siv, Ayer, Shimshon Timnasa, right? Vayar Shon Isha, Mibnos Plishtim, this is the full, you know, the fuller version of the Pasuk, where it says, he saw a woman from among the daughters of the Philistines, Vatita Vienei Shimshon, right? And she found favor in the eyes of Shimshon, right? Umasa Shelzu Shebatimnas is called Umasa Shelzu Sheba.